The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Choshev Rabbonim, Dayonim, to our very, very dear Musmochim, to the parents, the grandparents, the wives, the in-laws, families of the Musmochim, ladies and gentlemen, the topic for our talk this evening is our Lithuanian Torah heritage. Lithuanian Jewry made many contributions to Jewish culture, Jewish history, Jewish life in general. But one contribution towers far above the rest and has had an everlasting impact and influence on the entire Jewish world. And that is the towering and unbelievable heights of the yeshivas and the heights attained by the Torah sages. Now, Lithuania was a Torah community going back many, many centuries. But this evening, I would like to concentrate more on the Lithuanian community of the last 140 years, from the 1800s to the time of the war in 1940. In order to properly appreciate what Lithuania was, we must for a minute examine the Jewish population of Europe prior to World War II. Europe had an estimated Jewish population of 11 to 12 million souls. Poland alone had some 3.5 to 4 million Jews. Russia also, 3 to 4 million Jews. Lithuania, maximum estimate of their Jewish population was 250,000. 150,000 in political Lithuania, and another 100,000 in greater Lithuania, Belarusia, White Russia, which was the old Lithuania. When we look at 150 to 250,000 people against a population, a European population of 12 million, compared to Poland of 3 to 4 million, Russia to 3 to 4 million, we are speaking of a tiny community. The fact is, not too much larger than the Jewish community of South Africa. Every community had its Torah giants. Almost every country in the world had its Torah giants. Almost every country had a yeshiva of international repute. Berlin had its Hildesheim Academy. Hungary had its Pressburg. Poland had its Lublin. Tiny Lithuania had some 15 to 20 yeshivas of international repute, attracting students from Russia, from Poland, Latvia, Germany, England, USA, South Africa. There was Valajum, the Mir, Ramalis, Slonim, Lomj, Kelm, Slobodka. There was Telz, Radin, Lida, Ponovich, Nevardik, Kamenets, Grodno, Slutsk, Kletz, Baranovich. The huge majority of these yeshivas, if not all of them, were international places of learning. While each major country in the world was able to produce perhaps one or two of such yeshivas. The list of the Russian yeshivas reads like an all-star cast, a who's who, world famous people. It is unending. To mention only a few, there was the great Reb Chaim and the Reb Yitzchel of Volozhin, the Netziv, Reb Yeshaber Saraveitchik, Reb Foyel Shapiro. Mir had its Reb Kamai, Reb Lezer Yudel Finkel, Reb Yerucham. Reb Alis had its Reb Basin, Meir Basin, Reb Shlema Hyman. Roms had Reb Yechiel Mordechai Gordon, Reb Zelig Ruch, Kelm, Reb Simcha Zissel Tzif, Slobodkin, the Alter of Noti Hirsch, Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein. Telz had its great Reb Lezer Telzer, Reb Lezer Gordon, Reb Yosef Leib Bloch, Reb Chaim Telzer, Reb Shimon Shkotin, Reb Yitzchok. Ran had its world famous Chofetz Chaim, its Reb Naftali Trop, leader of the Major Tzu'iloi, Ponovich, Reb Yitzchok Ponovich, Reb Yosef Kahaneman, Nevardik, Reb Yosef Yosel Horowitz, Kamenetz had its Reb Orach Be'er, Slutsk, Reb Yisrael Zalman Meltzer, Kletsk, Reb Aaron Kotler, Baranovich had its Reb Elchanan Wasserman. This is not the entire list. We are only scratching the surface. In addition, Lithuania had its Rabbonim. Many of those who we mentioned were Rosh Yeshivas and also the Rav of the town. But there were numerous great Rabbonim, world famous. There was the Kodno Rav, Reb Yitzchok Elchanan. In his time in the 1800s, he was the undisputed authority in Jewish law for the entire world. He was succeeded by Reb Avrom Kahana Shapiro, Dvar Avraham. Later there was the Vilna Rav, Reb Chaim Eiser, who became the world authority in Jewish law. There was the Briska dynasty, Reb Yeshaber, Reb Chaim, Reb Velvel. Asheshuk, Shavel, Pinsk, Skudvil, Nevadik, all had world-famous Rabbonim. Reb Yosef Zundel Huttner, Remea Atlas, Reb Aaron Volkin, Remea Perlman. In Nevadik was Reb Yechiel Michel Epstein, who wrote his monumental work of the Orach HaShulchan, and his lustrous son, Reb Orach Epstein, the Baal Torah Tamimo, Reb Dovrul Karlina, Zalman Sorotskin, the Lutzkerov, the Vainutarov, Reb Ezra Altshuler, the great Reb Yecheskel Abramsky, Reb Meisher Shaskis from Roms, Reb David Lifshitz from Tzuvok. If we were to list all of the Rabbonim of the last 100 or 150 years in Lithuania, we would be here the entire night. Little towns, Vilkomir, Sharava, Kedan, Minsk, Salant, Plugyang, became famous. Not because of their universities, not because of their commerce, because of their Rabbonim. But there was something else also. There was an old tradition in Lithuania. The Torah is Moreshes The Kehilas Yaakov belongs to all Jews. It was by no means the monopoly of the Rosh Yeshivas or the Rabbonim. There's the famous story of the father of Rabbi Elazar Gordon, who was a brandy maker. And at night when he was watching his brandy, he used to learn. When he would go visit his Rebbe, Reb Chaim, the great Reb Chaim Volozhiner, in his clothing of a worker, of a laborer, Reb Chaim would stand up for him. Because this man was so great in Torah. There was Reb Yisrael Salanter, who refrained most of his life from ever taking a public position. There was the Chometz Chaim. The Chometz Chaim was not a Rav, nor was he a Rosh Yeshiva. They tell the story that his yeshiva in Ran was built because students flocked to him. Eventually he had to build something for them. All of his life he refused to go in rabbinical garb. He ran, together with his wife, a shop. He was a shopkeeper. And this is why there are so many stories of mistaken identity with the Chometz Chaim. And the Chometz Chaim, the Baal Mishneh Berura, which is the greatest of the greatest authorities of contemporary Jewish law that we have. My Rebbe, Reb Mordechai Gifter, tells the Rosh Yeshiva, said the Chofetz Chaim was like Rashi. Übergegangen alle Grenzen. There were no boundaries. He was respected in every part of the world. If it was by the Polish Jewry, or the Hungarian Jewry, the Hasidic Jewry, there was no difference. Our own Rabbi Perlow here, who studied in Ram, told me the story. The Chofetz Chaim, he traveled often, came to a city where they didn't know him. They asked him where he's from. He said, from Ram. They said, Ram, isn't that the home of the great Chofetz Chaim? The great Gaon, the great saint? The Chofetz Chaim said, he's a simple Jew. He's not so great. He's not such a great saint. They became so angry at him that they ran him out. And they cursed him and hit him. Chofetz Chaim came back to Radin and told this story. He said, what do I learn from this? Gelernt as Ayi Tomen Shreden Loshen Hora Afil Avzich Alein. That one must not speak Loshen Hora even on his own self. The Chazon Ish, who lived in obscurity in a suburb of Vilna, later on went to Eretz Yisrael. Never took a public office. He also, together with his wife, was a shopkeeper. Yet in his time, he became one of the very greatest authorities in Jewish law. I recall when I was a Bochur in Telz, 1953, the Chazon Ish had died. Rabbi Yomer, the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, gave a hespit. He said, who will we write our shailas to now? Who will we write our questions to now? Imagine, a person not holding a public position, not a Rav, not a Rosh Yeshiva, a Balabos. And the Telzer Rav is saying, who will we write our questions to now? But this was an old tradition in Lithuania. We can go back centuries. There was Rav Avram Danzig, Chai Ordo, who was a merchant. The Gaon himself, Vilna Gaon, never took public office. Rav Gifter, who was in Telz, already in the twilight, of those days, in the 1930s, would speak of what he saw there. He would tell a story of a shoemaker who was a great gaon, and every Friday used to get up at 12 at night and learn the entire night with his son. He would tell of another merchant who would close the door at noon and sit and learn in a shop. Rabbi Avraham Chaim Lappin, who was also there at the same time, told me the story that when the Rav Reb Yitzchok would give his monthly shiur, which was a great shiur, Balabatim from the city would come to hear it. And when they would ask Akasha, they would ask questions, you could see how he became tense. These were the Balabatim that he had to deal with. If we go back even further, there was a letter written by the Vilna community in 1620, where they wanted to gain entry to the Vard of Arba Arotzes. They wanted to gain entry to a certain group of Torah authorities. So they praised their community. They said, aside from the rabbis, and aside from the Rosh Yeshivas, we have 300 laborers who are Boki B'Shas Bavli V'Yishalvi. We have 300 laborers who are excel in the entire Babylonian and Jerusalem Talmud in 1620. There was the shoemaker, there was the blacksmith, there was even the chimney sweep. Not everyone was great in Torah, but Torah by no means was the monopoly in Lithuania of the Rosh Yeshivas and the Rabbonim. The influence of this Torah was profound on all of Europe and all of the world. Talmidim flocked from all over the world to these yeshivas, and then returned back home to their communities. Great Rabbonim and the Rosh Yeshivas were produced by these yeshivas, and they went to spread Torah. Lithuania had a shita, an ideology, where Torah must be spread wherever Jews are, be it in the Golah, be it in Eretz Yisrael. I remember hearing the old Rosh Yeshiva Ramotel Zecher Tzadik Livrocha says, Nochazah Holocaust, after such a churban, Bochrim dav zayn grois, dav vern grois in Torah. They have to become great in Torah and go umatum ganz America, go all over America and all over the world to spread Torah. This was their love for Torah and their love for the Jewish nation. And they did. They provided Rabbonim for Latvia, for Russia, for Poland, for Germany, for England, for Israel. A few examples. Again, just a few. Rabbi Raphael Hamburger became the chief Rav of Hamburg. Rabbi Eliyahu Chaim Meisels became the chief Rav of Lodz. Lodz was the textiles center of Poland. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter would go to teach in Germany. Rabbi Itzel Petterberger became the chief Rav of St. Petersburg. Leningrad, which was the capital of Russia. There was Rabbi Naftali Amsterdam, who became a Rav in Sweden. And I believe perhaps in Amsterdam also. There was Remea Simcha, who became the world famous Rav in Dvinsk in Latvia. Their influence didn't stop with Europe. They went to Eretz Israel. In 1840, Reb Shmuel Salant, son-in-law of Reb Yeses Zundel Salant, who was the Rebbe of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, became the first, the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, a position he held for 70 years. He established what today is the oldest yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, Eitz Chaim. This was expanded with the help of his grandson, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky. And they brought in the great Rabbi Zalman Meltzer and the great Rabbi Aaron Kotler as Rosh Yeshivas. Rabbi Avram Yitzchok HaKain Cook, Talmud of Netziva Goloshin, he became the chief rabbi in 1865. Later, he was born in 1865, but he became the first chief rabbi of Israel. Slobodka, 1925, went to Eretz Yisrael and established the Hebron Yeshiva. Rabbi Shemot Epstein, later Rabbi Cheskel Sana, became the Rosh Yeshiva. Longs went to Petach Tikva. Chazenish went to Bnei Brak. Ponovitcherov went to Bnei Brak. And on. USA. All major yeshivas in the United States were built by Lithuanian Rosh Yeshivas. Rabbi Yitzchok Elchonon, which later became known as Yeshiva University. Ne Yisrael of Baltimore. Chaim Berlin. Tovada, Spring Valley, Tells, Chovetz Chaim Yeshiva, Beis HaTalmud. Simcha Wasserman went to the United States, to the Midwest in Detroit, to build a yeshiva. Then he went out to the West Coast, California, to teach Torah. Great Rabbonim came to America. Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, Rabbi Elio Henkin, Rabbi Moshe Rosen, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, who in our time later was to rise to become the greatest authority for the world in Jewish law. They went to England. Numerous yeshivas were built there. There was the Schneider Yeshiva, the Sunderland Yeshiva, famous Gateshead Yeshiva by Elie Lapian of Kelm. Rabbi Elio Dessler, the great Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky went there. South Africa, Rabbi Yitzchok Kosofsky, who had married the sister of Rabbi Chaim Eliezer, the Vilna Rav. He was the Rav of Ibya and later Volkovisk. Rabbi Chaim Eliezer pushed him, said, "You must go to South Africa because there are Jews there that need Torah." And then later his son, Rabbi Michal Kosofsky. About 10 years ago, the Vizhnitz Rod visited South Africa. Vizhnitz is far away from Lithuania. I believe it's in Galicia. It's a Hasidic dynasty. He came into the yeshiva and he asked me, "What derech, what approach is your method of study here in the yeshiva?" I told him, "I assume it's Tells because this is what I learned." So he said, "Litvish, yes." I asked him, "And what approach do they use in your yeshiva?" He said, "Litvish." I said, "I can understand why we do here, but why do you do in Vizhnitz?" He says, "Of Vizhnitz, you should know that almost in all yeshivas in the world," this goes back many years, "is the Litvish derech. Because they were the ones who came to build the yeshivas, and they were the ones who came to teach in the yeshivas." This center of Torah had a profound influence on Lithuania itself. Lithuania permeated itself with Torah. They had their well-organized educational systems and networks. They had their chadori, macheder, a yeshiva ktano, a machina, a yavne for girls, a machon lemachanchim for teachers, yeshiva gdolos. They had their well-organized communities, all under the Morada Asra, the Rav, and his bezdin. They had their tzedakos, their hachnosis kale, their bikachelim, their meshim zakenim, their oleitroms, their hever kedishos, their klezim, the bote midrashes, houses of study were full from morning to night. Those that knew how to learn, they were hever shas. Those that couldn't learn the Gemara, they were hever mishnais. For others, it was hever ein Yaakov, hever chaya odom. And for those who could not learn at all, there was hever tehillim. All roads, all aspirations led in one direction: greatness in Torah, madreges haTorah. The old Helzer Rosh Yeshiva Ramotl used to say that his mother, every time a child was born, to her she would say, Eved Zayin a Rov, he will be a Rov. And then one day they told her, there's not enough towns for all of your children to be Rabbonim of. They said, we will build more towns, she answered. They were a happy people. They were an optimistic people, saturated with the joy and hope of Torah. They were an industrious and ambitious people, and a generous people, stimulated with the industry and ambitions and generosity of our great Torah. Their respect for their Torah, for their Rabbonim, for those who studied it, was enormous and unparalleled. The Gifter used to tell the story. There was a man by the name of Itzi Ashmid. Itzi, the blacksmith, in Telz, never learned. Not everyone was a great lamdan. Never learned. But when a bocher from the Mechina, from the preparatory school of the yeshiva, would walk by, he would stand up and say, Talmid Chochem. And all of this was against a background of dire poverty. Litva was not a wealthy country. Of great illiteracy amongst the populace. Of a harsh climate that had long winters almost comparable to Siberian winters. Of a third world health infrastructure, or less. Of constant political upheaval and pogroms. They were between Russia and Poland, the pogroms and the anti-Semitism. It's difficult to attribute why did this all happen and where did it come from. But if it can be, and it cannot be attributed to one person, but everyone agrees that there was one individual who probably had a greater influence on Lithuania than any other single individual. And this was Rabbi Eliyahu Mevilna, the Vilna Gaon, who lived in the 1700s. Ironically, he also refused to accept public position. He was not a Rav. He was not a Rosh Yeshiva. In fact, he refrained from making public statements. He lived very low profile. He was blessed with an unparalleled brilliance, spent his days and nights studying Torah with an unparalleled diligence, and he put everything he learned into practice. If they were the mitzvahs between one man and Hashem, or the mitzvah between one man and his fellow man, his conduct was perfect. To such heights he rose that while many were called the Gaon, he was called the Gaon HaChosid, a saint, a genius, a giant, and a saint. The fact is, in some writings, Rav Avram Danzig, the Chayodim, writes, V'sho'alti as HaChosid, I asked the Chosid. He was referring to the Vilna Gaon. He became surrounded by a small circle of brilliant students who they themselves became Gaonim. Eventually he established a small place, a small base of Medrash for them. And he was to become the most influential and authoritative voice in all of Greater Lithuania. And his fame would spread throughout the entire Jewish world. What did he teach? He taught as follows. Tchilas Hakol. The first thing a Jew has to know, Tzorech Odom Leida, Shehateri Shalonu Hi Chayoseinu. That our Torah is our life. Ukemei Shehadogim Chayim B'mayim. V'imheim Nifrodim Min HaMayim HaMesim. And just like fish thrive in water, and if they become distant from the water, they dry up. So is it with the Jew, we thrive in Torah. And if we become distant from it, we also are like fish out of water, we dry up. And therefore, we mevorech al Torah, v'chai olam notar disocheinu. The bracha we make on the Sefer Torah, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for implanting in our midst an everlasting life. He further taught, by example, that the greatest joy a person can have in this world is the understanding of the depths of the Torah. There were many times when the Gaon had difficulties fathoming the great depths of difficult parts of the Torah. And it was common. The story is told by Reb Chaim, his Talmud, Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Reb Chaim would come to visit the Gaon 4 times every year to study with him. One time he came, the Gaon was pale. He hadn't eaten for days. He refused to drink. And he said, Reb Chaim, why haven't you come sooner? He could not understand a very difficult part of the Bavli or Yishalmi. Let us sit down together and see if we can understand it. And they worked the whole day. And they understood it. And to the Gaon it was like a yantif. His face would beam. A joy that was incomparable. He further taught that when a person learns, and he learns to show his brilliance, he learns with a lot of mental acrobatics. The more he learns, the more proficient he becomes, the greater he is in his own eyes. But when a person learns derech ha'emes, to understand the great Torah of ours, the more he learns, the smaller he becomes in his own eyes. Because he thereby sees just how great and infinite the Almighty's Torah is. And this is why the Lithuanians were such humble people. He instructed Reb Chaim to establish a central yeshiva, which was unique at that time, which Reb Chaim established in the city of Volozhin, where he was a rov. And at the turn of the 1800s, this yeshiva was to become known as the Mama from Alla Litvishi Yeshivas, the mother of the contemporary Litvishi Yeshiva. Because all of the Rosh Yeshivas that founded other yeshivas with his students or later students at his yeshiva. And the Litvisha were very particular about this Shalsheles Hayuchsin, about this train of tradition. The Gifter used to say many times, what we are doing here today entails, do not take lightly. Because I learned by the Telzerov, the last Telzerov, Reb Yitzchok. And he was a student of his father-in-law, of his father, Reb Yosef Leibloch. And he was a student of the great Reb Blazer Gordon, his father-in-law. And Reb Blazer learned by Reb Yisrael Salanter. Sale learned by Rabbi Yosef Zundel Salant. Rabbi Yosef Zundel learned by Rabbi Chaim Volozhin and the son of the Mitzul. And they learned by the Gaon. What emerged was a community which did not speak of Torah values like other places in the world. Germany, England, Hungary, Poland, USA, there were Torah values. There were values, secular values, academic values, materialistic values, and Torah values. No. They spoke of the value of Torah. The most precious commodity in the world is the Almighty's Torah. All other values blend into oblivion in comparison. Where there is Torah, then the entire world is full of light, full of goodness. Like HaKadosh Baruch Hu said when he created the world, Vayara Hashem Ki Tov, it was a good world. And then we have everything. When there is no Torah, we might think we have everything. We have nothing. We can have civilization. We can have 20th century high tech. We can have academic wisdoms. We can have democracy. It is worthless. Look at Germany, which had democracy. It had civilization. It was the most advanced country in the 20th century. And initiated a war that killed 55 million people. Look at Stalin, who's alleged to have murdered, be responsible for the death of 60 million people. Japan was uncovered that at the end of the war, besides all of the injury they inflicted on the rest of the world, they had decided to fight to the end, to commit national suicide. It's a population of 60 million people. This is Japan, the masters of the most sophisticated high tech in the world today. Look at Vietnam, at Korea, at our own Africa. There was Ethiopia, Somalia, Rwanda, Burundi, Sudan. Reader's Digest published just recently that there's been a loss of 1.2 million lives in Sudan, and 5 million people have been uprooted and displaced from their homes by the enemy. When it comes to a Jew with Torah, he thinks 100 times, at least the Torah tells him, before he will inflict hurt on someone, even an emotional hurt. One life to the nations that have no Torah, a million lives is nothing. This is the community of tiny Lithuania that had such a profound influence on the Jewish world. The great Meir Shapiro of Lublin, he traveled to Lithuania before he built his yeshiva to look at the Lithuanian yeshivas. He wanted to go meet the Chomitzkayim. See, he traveled to Rotten. Now, the Meir Lublin was no country boy. Lublin, Warsaw, Lodz, these were 20th century cities. And he was a member of the Polish parliament. His disciple writes on him, he had to travel to an utter insignificant town that was not even on most maps, Radom, to meet the Chomitzkayim. There were no trains going to Radom. You took a train as far as you could go, and from there, you either hired a coach or you walked. And there were no paved roads going to Radom. That means after the winter thaw, everything turned into mud. And this is the stories of the blotter. They had aspirations for themselves and their children to be great in Torah and seem to be oblivious to their materialistic surroundings. And from here comes a treasure chest of wonderful stories about the Rav who said that his mother wanted to bring him to yeshiva. There was no yeshiva ktana. Every village had a cheder, but not even a yeshiva ktana. They were going to go to the next town. It was a day's walk. He became tired. He was a young boy. And his mother carried him the rest of the way. Or about the mothers and fathers who sold their dire possessions so at least one of their sons could go study in the yeshiva. This they learned from the Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon, as a young man, traveled all of Europe, states that you must search out Torah like you search for gold. Wherever there was a great Torah luminary, he would travel to meet him, to see what he could learn from him. When he had heard, had seen the writings of the great Italian luminary, Ramesh Chaim Luzzatto, he said, if he was still living, I would go by foot to meet him. When new manuscripts arrived, it states he put on his big day yontif, his yontif clothing, and celebrated. It was common that a bocher in the yeshiva, a young boy, would become bar mitzvah, and his father would tell him, when you come home Pesach, then we'll make the kiddush, then we'll have the schnapps in the kichel, after Pesach. But meanwhile, stay in the yeshiva. Don't leave a yeshiva. To them, the words of Torah were the words of life. I met a Jew here from Grodno. He told me he was in cheder, and they came to get him. They said, your Zayd is very, very sick. Come quickly. He came to see him. The Zayd said, what are you doing here? Why are you out in cheder? He said, they told me to come that you were very sick. He said, thank you for coming, but go back immediately. I met a watchmaker many, many years ago in St. Louis. I had to fix a watch, and someone told me, there's a watchmaker. He was 70 or 80 years old. I asked him where he's from. He was from Lithuania. He had learned in a cheder there, but he had become totally detached from Yiddishkeit in America. I asked him, what did he learn? He started to sing over the psukim that he learned in cheder 60 years before. I, at that time, was teaching young children. I don't think my children could have done that, even what they learned yesterday. Then he looked at me, and he said, you remind me of my Rebbe. And I said, why? He said, because you have a sweet smile. His association of 60 years ago was that of sweetness. I met here once an entrepreneur, very wealthy, powerful person, also advanced in age, from Lithuania. He lived in a house like a palace. And I asked him what was in Lithuania. We lived in a hovel. We lived in a shack. It was cold in the winter. Herring is given a ganze yonte, mit schwarzem Brot. And we spoke like this for about 15 minutes. Then a tear comes to his eye and he says, aber dorten is given besser. The leaven. Life was better there. And I was flabbergasted. What was better? I see here in front of me is Mr. Kasif Sr., Craig's grandfather, who studied in Telz. At Craig's Chasana, we spent quite a bit of time speaking about old Telz. And he started to tell me every detail of what took place during the years he was in Telz. And I said, wait a minute. You came to tell us, I think he told me when he was about 11 years old, he came for the cheder. And he was there way up in advanced shurim in the yeshiva. Today you're in your 80s. We're speaking here of over 60 years ago. How do you remember so vividly every detail and tells? And he says, because they were the best years of my life. Now, what was the best years? A yeshiva bocher. We speak about how he slept on a bench, how almost he didn't have what to eat, the poverty, the pogroms. It was the sweetness of the Torah. Many of these values have remained here in the South African Jewish community. The respect that the South African Jews have for Torah, have for Talmidei Chachamim, the love for learning, the love for mitzvahs, the generosity of giving tzedakah. I once came into a shop a number of years ago, and there was an old Jew, and in the shop, under the counter, he had a Gemara, and when there was no customers, he was learning. So I said, Yashakeach. He says, why are you giving me a Yashakeach? I says, a Jew sits in the shop, and he learns the Gemara. He deserves a Yashakeach. Give me a Yashakeach. And the gezun, so I'm cooking in the Gemara. You're giving me a Yashakeach. We have to give the Eibishter, the Almighty, a Yashakeach, that we have the opportunity and the health to look into a Gemara. That story, last year when I had the opportunity, it was just a few in December, to visit my Rebbe, Reb Gifter, I told him. He said, his comment was, Litvishi. Reb Simcha Wasserman, on his visits here, told me that he loves to come here to South Africa because he sees happy Jews. Then he said, what do I mean happy Jews? Jews that are happy that they are Jewish. This is not something you see all over the world. Mishalochim will tell you, they come in, people will give them money, and then they will say thank you. They give me money, and they say thank you. Because they know what a great schus and mitzvah they've had. But this is something you do not find other places. One told me recently he came to see a big businessman, and the person put everything aside and told the secretary, no calls, please. He says he couldn't believe it. This is the Yerusha, the inheritance. I walked into a shop once in town. There was a big businessman there. I knew the owner. And I came into him, to him, and he was trembling, he was pale. And I said, what happened? I thought maybe there was a robbery or something. And he says, the first time in my life. I said, what happened? He says, I got a new secretary, and I was in a meeting, and a mashulach came, and she told him I was in a meeting, and he left. And I ran outside to see if I could find him. And I couldn't find him. This is the first time in my life that a mashulach has gone out of my shop empty-handed. My other secretaries knew that if I'm in a meeting, but a mashulach comes, you call me. These might be common here, but not other places, because these are the Litvisha qualities that go all the way back to the great giants, to the Gaon, and to others. Now, let us spend a few minutes speaking about our mushmachim. Actually, after a story like this, I don't think I have to charge the graduates. But I must say that this group is for certain one of the very best that we've ever had. Each one has learned a minimum of 7.5 to 10 years, full-time in Yeshiva Gdola. They all have excelled in amelus, in toil, hasmodo ushkedo, in their diligence, in their persistence and determination, in their responsibility, and in their brilliance. Something unique about this group, well, actually, this is unique. We usually would honor them at a brocho, but being that many of them have positions now, and they couldn't come on Shabbos, and many of their parents live far away, and also our facilities are too small, we decided to combine this with our Reish Chodesh dinner. But what was unique with this group is that the final stage of learning is an area which takes about a year and a quarter, known as Yoredeya. We've always had, with all the other groups, someone come in to give shiurim, regular lectures in Yoredeya. Who used to do it with the late Rabbi Shimonovitz Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Last group, he was already in the old age home. Some of our own instructors did it. This group, they learned chulin with me, but the entire Yoredeya they did totally on their own. I told them to take the main shachetas. They took all of the shachetas. Because I did not teach them personally myself in this Yoredeya, I figured that at least at the very end, let me spend a lot of time with them. So I gave them 30 hours, minimum, 30 hours of oral examinations, where I went through almost every area of Yoredeya with them. They knew everything. The only areas that they didn't know too well were those that the ones I didn't know so well. And a further very strong point is they are all, one way or the other, continuing their learning, whether they are taking positions or not. States Rabbi Yechim ben Zakkai Hayameinu Shivchon. Yechim ben Zakkai used to mention the particular qualities of his Talmidim. Let me speak about them in counter alphabetical order. Trevor Sifris. One thing about Trevor, no one will ever say that he talks too much. Trevor has the great quality of Kol Yomai Godalti Bein HaChachomim VeLeMotzo Siteiv LeGuf Mishtiko. That our sages say, silence is a sign of wisdom. And it was very difficult many times for me to understand or to know just how much Trevor was understanding, because he never spoke. But every once in a while, when I would say over the Gemara, sometimes I would not interpret the intentions of the Gemara properly. Eventually it would catch up with me. But whenever I would make such an error as that, immediately, before anyone else, Trevor would make a little growl and say no. And then I understood that he is understanding very well. I have not heard Trevor speak too often, too publicly. But all of those that have heard him say that he's a Baldashin Nifle and a Magid Shir Nifle. He gives wonderful drushes and wonderful shiurim with clarity and with depth. I know he's always making a siyum in the Yeshiva. He's finishing a Masechta. He's finishing another Masechta. He's finishing a Seder Mishnais. He's finishing a Sefer Nach. Or he's finishing all of the Nach. And he's overcome many obstacles with sheer determination. And now he's embarking on what we hope will be an illustrious career in Torah education. That's Rabbi Trevor Sifris, Rabbi Brian Opert, a young man of enormous energy, consistency, and someone who assumes great responsibility for the klal, for others. He's always involved in tutoring someone, organizing programs, Arbotzes Torah, Stoka, Chesed, Bikur Cholim. Works very, very hard. Seems never to run out of his energy. And he is also embarking on an illustrious, what we hope will be an illustrious educational career, where he can assume a good, heavy, old yoke of responsibility. Rabbi Craig Kasoff also works very, very hard. At his wedding, I mentioned that he had just received the award for the outstanding mark in UNISA in accountancy from the Accountants Association of Pretoria. But I mentioned not because we want to turn out good accountants. We have nothing against that. But because no one in the yeshiva would know that he was doing UNISA. He with others would never infringe. We have a long session in the yeshiva. It can run 10 to 12 hours a day. We're on a 7-day schedule. But they always manage to take care of these things on their own time. Something in particular about Craig is what the Torah tells us. Drochei Darchei Noam. The ways of the Torah are ways of beauty. He has the type of character and the type of personality that endears him to everyone. He's a strong driver, but he's very soft. He's very good. And he's embarked on a career in community work, in education, and in Rabbonis. And it's our desire that he should go from strength to strength. Rabbi Warren Goldstein. Warren is a person of, they told me your father's also like that, unstoppable determination. Brilliant mind. Very hard-hitting, workaholic, and everything runs on perfect clockwork responsibility. It was a pleasure to have someone like that and the others in the yeshiva. The fact is, we're at a great loss that they are leaving us. And he's embarked on a career of Rabbonis, which we hope will be one of great success. My son, Meisha. Now, Meisha wants to go in the traditional, one of the traditional Litvisha ways that we mentioned, where he does not want to assume any public office. He always, from a little boy, loved business. I remember when we started the yeshiva, and my Rebbetzin would take care of the books at our house. One day we called the accountant over, and they spread all the books out on the dining room table. And Meisha, who was just a little fella, came marching in, and we shooed him out. And as fast as we shooed him out one door, he came in the other door. He was just glamorized by those books. But he has good example to follow. Chaim Volozhin himself was a man of commerce. He owned the factory. And even when he became the Vloshim Rov, he never wanted to give up his independence and maintain the factory. And he has enormous energy. And during the past many years, he's been juggling both balls together, which demanded enormous work and billions. And he wants to be both a Yisochar and a Zvulun. Gives great amounts of what he makes to Tztoka. And worked very hard, very, very hard, to see himself through to the smicha. And what I'm very happy about, that now he has the smicha, he still maintains his chavrusa with Warren in the yeshiva, and they still come in on a daily basis, even though he still runs his business. Reminds me a story from the mother of the great Kseis HaChesed. She had 4 sons, I believe. 3 of them were great rabbonim. One was the Baal Kseis HaChesed and Avnei Miluim. The other was the Kuntres HaSfeikas, and so on. One was a businessman. One day when they came to visit her, they got into a very hot discussion over the Gemara, and went back and forth and back and forth, and the one who was the businessman turned out to be right. And she was laying down on a couch, she got up and started to dance, and she said, "Look, even my son, the businessman, is such a great Talmud Chacham." It has been a real pleasure to have all of you in the yeshiva. They've been exemplary. And I wish them that they will carry on with their wonderful work in Torah and in Mitzvos and in Arbotzes Torah. And they will perhaps in some way bring back even just a little of that great Lithuanian heritage that this community so much deserves. And to their parents, to Judge and Mrs. Ezra Goldstein, and to Selwyn Strzok, and to the Zadies and Bobbers, the entire family, to Mr. and Mrs. Julius Kasef, and the Zadie Kasef, and the entire family, and to Mr. and Mrs. Jackie Sifris, and the entire family, and in absentia to Mr. and Mrs. Brian Opert and the entire family. May you all enjoy much nachas. I remember when my first son received smicha, and at the same time we had a few other mazel tovs. Son was born, a grandson was born, a granddaughter, so forth. I told someone, he said, "The others are not yours. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you. Smicha, that's your achievement. That's your son's achievement. That is a far greater simcha than all of the other simchas." May you all have nachas, and may we all see great achievements and strides from our Mushmachim. Mazel tov to you all. Thank you very much.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information, or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226 Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.